discussion are part of the political debate. Now, having said that, just in the last few days with President Trump inviting Conor McGregor into the White House, he has effectively thrown the whole issue right straight into the mainstream, whether the left and the liberals want to agree among themselves in Ireland or not. The fact of the matter is that it is an issue, because it has to be an issue, because, as you know yourself, if the President of the United States says something is an issue, it is, whether it was before or not, it's neither here nor there. And the reaction of the media, of course, has been to Trump has been hostile since way before his election in 2016, and has continued to be. So there's that mind pattern being prepared there of left-wing hostility to Trump. But the problem with that, from our point of view, or the point of view of our political grouping, is that has resulted in a pro-Trump reaction. And therefore, my fear, is that we are going to go through this long-staged conservative backlash that really isn't addressing the problem at all. And we don't have the time as a nation, because we're 6 million people on this island. Now about 1 million of them are foreign, and about 300,000 or 400,000 of them are non-white in a very short space of time. And we're taking in immigrants at the rate of about 80,000 a year. So you can see how the Irish population is being diluted extremely rapidly, and the new immigrants are not from continental Europe. The last 5 years, there's a to and fro from continental Europe with Poles, Lithuanians, and it's general Eastern Europeans coming and going. But their share of the immigrant population is roughly flat, but the non-white element is rapidly growing. And with it, all the problems that you, as an American, would be very familiar with. These are new to us. And I know from watching the United States' progression downhill, and I know from watching the European Union nations like France, Germany, Britain, Italy, and etc., I know that, number one, there will be some kind of conservative phase. And number two, that we don't have time for it to be as long as it was in the United States. And we don't have time for it to be as long as it was in Europe, or we are not going to be sufficiently organized as a real national identification, addressing the real questions in time, not to become a non-white majority country before we get past people going, I wish things were the way they were 10 years ago, and realizing that this is a much bigger problem. And not only is it a bigger problem in a European or a global scale, but it's a much bigger problem within our own country, and is tied in, and this is where the National Socialist ideology comes in. It's tied in this to all of these other things that are happening to us, like the COVID lockdowns, like the forced vaccinations, like the economic future of the country, like who is controlling the Irish economy, the extent to which the European Union is dominating real political decision making in Ireland, and our own legislature is a member state legislature, which is kind of like a state legislature in the United States, except worse, because there are no defined rights within the European Union which are constitutionally held back to the member states. There's no limit to the authority of the European Union within Ireland. And then there's no questioning within that context as of yet. Or at least, you know, let's put it in another way, we're trying to start that conversation as to who it is controlling the mechanisms which are impacting our daily lives in this way, which leads us on, of course, to the obvious for you and I, the obvious, which is we have to now talk about the Jew. Because if you don't talk about the Jew, if you talk about the black man in your local village, it's impossible to understand that because he's not one black man. He's 200 that arrived last night. He was nobody. Their percentage of the population was nobody yesterday, and now they are a majority in your local community overnight. And he didn't do that under his own endeavor. He didn't do that of his own, of his own volition, I guess he agreed, but he didn't do that as a matter of his own initiative. And so where is this push coming from? And where is the globalist push coming from? And why is it coming? And that leads me back almost to my childhood politics, which is that it is time to ditch the conservative talk, the conservative rhetoric, and the optics of conservatism, and adopt a more radicalized, not only a more radicalized ideology, because as much as I could possibly do, I tried to push forward it in the most radical way that I could at any given time, but to push it forward optically as well. That we are in an existential crisis. We are in a life and death crisis. That Ireland will live or Ireland will die with this generation. And possibly the question of Ireland's life or death as a people will be decided within the next decade, 2 decades, 3 decades at the outside. And 3 decades is being very optimistic unless there's a major turnaround in how politics is working, because the white Europeans who are here, which might identify, you know, as you say, in the United States, all whites identify ultimately as being white Americans, is the white foreigners in Ireland do not identify as Irish and don't really identify themselves as white and don't really think of themselves being here in 30 years time. So they aren't invested one way or the other. If once Ireland gets bad enough, they're just going to go home. And they're going to go home to largely all white societies in Eastern Europe for the time being, until, of course, the problem lands on their doorstep exactly as it did on ours. And all it takes, as we've seen in Poland, is all it takes is one slip of the electorate, one slip, one election, and in come the left, and in come the immigrants, and in comes the problem. But there's no, as I say, there's no identification as whites with them. They largely go about their business and do what they're doing, isolated from the population in general. And they intend to save enough money to go home and start, you know, a life for themselves there. And they are able to do so in much better terms now than they were, shall we say, when they originally started coming. This non-white problem, however, is growing. It's massive. It's clearly permanent. They are being fed a daily dose of propaganda by our mainstream media, which is, number one, that you're as Irish as anybody else. And number two, which is utterly and completely contradictory, is hate the Irish. Number one, you're as Irish as anybody else. Number two, hate the Irish. They're the problem. It's our Negro mind that can hold those two concepts together in the same place at the same time and not see a contradiction. So the hostility to immigration is there. The hostility to foreignness is there. The racial hostility is present in the immigrant community towards us, but it is not present in the Irish community as a response. It's not expressed in racial terms. It's not even generally expressed in racial terms. It's expressed in national terms. These are outsiders, these are foreigners, and it doesn't matter where they're from. And of course the problem is it does matter It very much does matter on a day-to-day basis if you're trying to deal with them as individuals and as a problem on a national scale. It very much does matter where they've come from. And it very much does matter whether they feel that they are here with some kind of racial grievance against white people, of which they include the Irish people, despite us not having a colonialist history, despite us not having any history of slavery. And I know, we could get into that slavery in America was a Jewish question as well. It wasn't really a white question, but the black people see it as a white question. And colonization and imperialism and the imposition of those things by international finance capitalism in the third world is being brought into Europe and now is being brought into Ireland as a racial hostility and a very distinctly racial hostility from the get-go. And Irish people need to wake up to that, and they're only very slowly doing so. And it's a matter of great concern, great concern.
I certainly concur. It's of the utmost concern. And you bring up a really good point when you talked about this conservative response to this problem, which is obviously fabricated and made up in this very specific way to specifically not address this through racial measures, right? So a common rhetoric from the conservative apparatus is that it's just illegal immigration that's the problem. It has nothing to do with who's coming or why they're. It's because they're illegal. They weren't put through a process and they didn't get the paperwork that says that they're a legal immigrant. And this kind of shapes the debate in a very different manner, specifically so that our people don't focus on that racial aspect. They don't see it through that lens and say, "Oh, maybe the problem is not that these people are illegals, but rather that they're here." They're completely culturally different than us. They actually, in most cases, despise us, hate us for our, history. And as you said, the racial, the slavery problem in the United States was very much a Jewish operation. There was little to do with white people. And even if let's just say it was completely correct that it was white people that did slavery in the United States. Do I have anything to do with that? Was I a part of of something like that? It's just absurd to, make me out to be the bad man for the deeds of ancestors, which again, my ancestors didn't even do those deeds, so it's beside the point anyway. But this is a serious problem with the conservatives, and I have this concern with Trump even being president. A lot of people thought of this as a win, oh, the conservative, the Republican, no more of the tranny stuff. This is a big win. And I don't view this as a win personally. I actually view this as the opposite because there's a great fear, which I think is very much in line with yours, that him being in, this is like a cooling agent where a lot of our people that are becoming upset with the things that are happening in society, they now see this supposed good conservative man get into power. And he'll pull back some of the gas prices and some of the like crazy egregious Marxist stuff, right? But those fundamental principles of race and these cultural values that are very important to us are never going to be touched on, and our people will completely fall asleep on it and think that, well, things are good because the economy is a little bit better. That's a very dangerous precedent to set. And like you said, we don't have the time for something like that. I don't think globally
Well,
we have that time.
from an Irish perspective, as it's presented to the average Irish person, Donald Trump is the Nazi president. You've already got there. Adolf Hitler is in the White House right now. Right now. And so that warps Irish people's perspectives entirely, because to a large degree, they believe that. To a large degree, they do believe that he is that far to the right and he is that dangerous. And when they're presented with things like his policy on Israel, Irish people are still honing in on, like, the Zionists are the real Nazis. They are. That is a plausible line to present to an Irish audience. From a left-wing perspective, is the and the vast majority of people will nod along and go, Yeah, Zionism, it's a problem. It's see, we have a very tiny Jewish population as part of the numerically speaking, they're infinitesimal. Having said that, they occupy significant and strategic places of power, like the head of the central bank, for example, in Ireland is. But because Ireland is run through the European Union, a lot of people don't see a direct Jewish influence in Irish government in the way that they see it in the United States. You can't name the names in the same clear and defined manner. Now you can take the Irish person then to Brussels and the names are there, but that all just seems foreign anyway. And to distinctly identify it as being somehow connected with a globalist conspiracy or somehow connected with international Jewry as a phenomenon and as a something that needs to be tackled on a broad basis is again not part of the national conversation. It was believable, I think, and I will respect anybody for having believed that Trump in 2016 might have intended to make a difference. I mean, there were hints, there were indications that all was not well, that things were far more kosher than they appeared to be. But there was a degree of reason behind the optimism that he just would simply break the mold. What astonishes me personally here is that I can only call it the Felford Again Awards, is how in 2020, when Biden came in and everything kept going on the same, pretty much the same way, except some of the rhetoric, just some of the rhetoric changed. And then in 2024, you have Trump coming back in, and you have all this renewed hope for the next 4 years. Like this man has come out of the wilderness of, and of Appalachia or somewhere, and that you haven't already had 4 years of Trump as president. You already have 4 years of seeing the fundamental problems which you face as a nation not being dealt with. And the idea that anybody fell for it a second time. Now, I mean, what would I do as an American last November? Would I have gone out and voted for him? Well, probably as the lesser of two evils. But having said that, sitting in the discomfort of this march, with Kamala Harris not being the immediate alternative prospect of being president, is I don't see how the glow hasn't worn off the idea of a Trump presidency and the idea that real problems are going to be solved. Like, for example, as you say, they're pulling back on some of the more egregious elements of the Marxist woke agenda, the cultural Marxist agenda, like critical race theory, transgenderism, and so forth. But those things weren't even mainstream American problems in 2016 before he came in. So it's a little bit like the problem we have in Ireland is people are hankering back for a time that wasn't that great anyway. It's like maybe when Reagan was elected in 1980, and his rhetoric was harking back to an early 20th century America. The idea that that should have resonance with people, and that should be an attractive thing for them to grasp hold of, was a plausible notion. Now, whether you believe that Ronald Reagan was going to deliver that in the manner in which he said he was going to deliver that, so a whole other story of naivety and disbelief at the ultimate consequences. But the thing about Trump is he's been there. He's been president for 4 years, and nothing changed. It only got worse, and it got worse at perhaps a slower pace. But then it got worse. at a faster pace. And now it's getting worse again at a slower pace. And some of these issues that you're facing in the United States, like transgender, which we're facing here as well, like transgenderism and the more egregious elements, as I said, of cultural Marxism. Some of these things, even the rhetoric is only talking about going back to 2015. It's not talking about undoing the damage, the cultural damage of the pretty much the latter half of the 20th century, at least. And in Ireland, we don't even have a conservative movement of any significance. And my fear, as I say, is if we don't skip that phase, if we don't skip we have to skip the Reagan phase, right? We have to skip it. We can't afford it. We can't afford a Ronald Reagan. We can't afford an Irish political figure becoming prominent in the country that talks about taking us back, say, to the 1990s. Because the 1990s weren't that great, actually. Now, compared to now, I see the attraction. I lived through them, so I know. I see the attraction. But I could see when I lived through them, the problems started there and started before there. And so we can't afford it, a Ronald Reagan phase of conservatism. We cannot afford a Trump phase of conservatism either, because that, to me, and looking at the United States now, that is just a delay factor on the ultimate solution, which is making the ultimate solution harder, because it is demographics is destiny. And ultimately, after 4 years of a Trump presidency, here will be the fundamental question. Within the borders of the United States of America, will there be more people hostile to the United States as an entity, as a functioning state, and as a political idea and concept than there were when he became president? And all the indications are already is that they will be worse. And so this is another 4 years of pretending for you the problem doesn't exist. And for us, we haven't got to Reagan yet, right? We haven't got to the Reagan excuse yet. Never mind the Trump excuse. We haven't got MAGA yet. We haven't got anywhere near that. That's Nazism in Ireland. That's Nazism. So, you know, we have a huge, huge task before us. But having said that, since it's happening so quickly, one would expect, logically speaking, that the response would take up a similar pace. And so I definitely don't think we're going to have a Reagan phase of Irish conservatism. I think in the worst case scenario, and I think I would hope we could skip this altogether, but in the worst case scenario, we're going to jump straight to a Trump phase. And a lot of Irish people now are looking at Conor McGregor being invited to the White House, looking at him saying that he's going to run for the presidency in Ireland, which has no executive powers, by the way, and which is almost impossible for him to get a nomination for, because you can't just get a certain number of signatures or whatever. They have to be current members of the Oireachtas, which is the Irish Parliament, or they have to be a number of local, like county councils, which is pretty much the same as the United States County Council is pretty much the same as the Irish County Council in scale and size. But you have to get a majority on four of those to get. Now, that means you can only get in to the nomination even for the presidency through the channels of the already established political system. So Conor McGregor isn't even going to be a candidate unless the current political establishment allow him to be a candidate, which means that even talking about him being a candidate, never mind whether he's a good candidate, a bad candidate, character flawed, or whatever, it doesn't matter. And what he would do, the limitations he would have on his presidency were he to be married, were he to be made president by the Irish people, which is unlikely in and of itself, but the limitations on the actual power he would wield as opposed to the symbolism is limited too. But it's not even going to happen. The candidacy is not going to even happen. And we're going to spend a year talking about it. And we're going to, and Irish conservatism right now is in a place where it's looking to Donald Trump as some kind of savior of the West. Still not thinking in white terms, but a savior of the West. Donald Trump will save America. When Donald Trump saves America, Donald Trump's influence will flow over, an American influence will flow over into Europe, and particularly into Ireland through Irish America, and particularly through an individual like Conor McGregor running for the presidency, will save Ireland somehow. And we will be spared the bother, if you like, of actually going through finding the solutions to these problems ourselves and battling for those solutions. First, we need to think of them. Second, we need to bring them to public consciousness. And third, we need to make them the majority point of view. And then we need to enact them against all of the other obstacles and barriers that are there. So an optimism in Trump, which is flowing into the right in Ireland, as insofar as it exists in its incoherent and incoherent form, is a delay factor. And it's a delay factor no more than you can't afford it in the United States in the White House. We can't afford it culturally. It's cultural overflow into our politics, which is, no, it can be done this way. Solutions can be found within the system as it's currently established. And there doesn't need to be radical changes. All we need to do is to go back to the way things were, and then people will pick a date off the top of their heads. As it were, people my age certainly will think of the 1990s, because that will have been the time when we were still racially homogenous, ethnically homogenous. Nationalism kind of went without saying, and it was the first period of real economic prosperity in Ireland since the foundation of the state, since the end of British rule. We were well off, you know, for the very first time ever. We were used to being poor. But as soon as we weren't poor, of course, the whole world was invited to the table. And now we're in that stage, and people are going, well, if only we could get back to the 90s. And we're going, that's not it. I tell you, if you go back to the 90s, if you could go back to the 1990s, and I'm not terrifically sure you could, but if you could, you would only be going back on the timeline to the same place that got you to where you are now. So you'd be boarding the train three carriages back. Conservatism is standing still, if you like, by walking from the front of the train to the back of the train really fast, right, while the train is moving forward. And you're thinking, if I could only get to the back of the train, everything would be fine. No, you're 20 miles, 30 miles forward on the road to the left and on the road to national destruction. You're 30 miles forward while you've been traveling the 60 meters of this, the length of this train. And as a generality, Irish people don't get it yet. They don't even nearly get it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can say the same for America, unfortunately. You know, and even when you do get people that maybe finally see the Jewish aspect behind a lot of these operations, whether it's, you know, Marxism being pushed in society or your financial institutions being controlled or the anti-white media, things of these different natures, these people still, more times than not, the ones that are now becoming anti-Israel, it's simply that, right? It's just anti-Israel. It's not anti-Jews controlling my nation or Jews being in power. It's anti-Israel, because Israel as a state is evil. So yet again, it's another method of deflecting the blame away from the act. Looks like we're back. Folks, can you guys see me on the show? It's this damn internet. It's been giving me problems for a couple days now. It's definitely on my end, not his. Let me just resend him a link. In. Sorry about that, folks. It's definitely on my end. All right, are we back? Sorry about that. I think my internet went out on me a little bit there. my apologies.
That's okay. I didn't know whether I should keep talking or not because I didn't know if I was on the screen or because you were frozen and you weren't saying anything and I just went a bit mumbly. And a bit Joe Biden.
Yeah. I do apologize.
They're going to take that clip out of context at some point. You know. Look at the old man's lost it. But anyway, yeah, that's very much how the current events, shall we say, are being perceived in Ireland, in the Middle East. In the Gaza and so forth, is that it's a Middle Eastern problem. Second of all, it's largely being blamed it's been blamed on Israelis, as if they were a distinct people from Jews, and it's being blamed on Zionists as if there was a thing that was not a Zionist Israeli, and more importantly, that as if the most Jews weren't Zionist by self-identification and by self-description. That is entirely missing from the discussion in Ireland. And also missing, of course, and glaringly missing from an Irish audience's perspective, is why the United States is so deeply involved in a conflict. Because we don't have a long memory for these things in our country. It's like, so the 1967 war and the Yom Kippur and all of this, the foundation of the State of Israel, that might as well, for Irish people, that might as well genuinely have happened 3-4 centuries ago. Israel has always been there in the mind of the average Irish person. And they're only beginning to come to grips within the Gaza structure. And that actually Israel's not been there even for the length of the lifetime of a lot of the people who actually live there. A lot of the people who lost their homes there, a lot of the people who have moved in there and taken over other people's homes there. But what is utterly bewildering to the average Irish person is why the United States is involved and heavily invested in this conflict in the Middle East in the way that it is. And the only conclusion that the left will give you, of course, it's, oh, this is an ongoing, it's like the Cold War, it's American imperialism, and it's part of the white supremacy agenda. And of course, the Israelis are white. So therefore, what they're doing in the genocide of Gaza is a white genocide against the brown people of Gaza. And so it's more white supremacy. And of course, the most powerful, militarily powerful and richest white country in the world, which is also white supremacist, which now is under a national socialist dictatorship of Donald Trump, of course, they are backing up the white supremacist Israeli state in Israel in its genocidal policy. And people are going, you see, it's another Holocaust. It's another Holocaust. It's another Holocaust. And the weird part about that is that Irish left-wingers persist in that language no matter how upset our Jews get. about the fact that they do. And they're horrified at what that this comparison or parallel is being made to the Holocaust, the story of the Holocaust. But of course, for the average Irish person, genocide for genocide seems perfectly, they're not nearly at the point of realizing the last one didn't happen. And they're only beginning to realize this one is happening. So, that has to be the ultimate falling off the stool moment, is when you're trying to move between realizing the last one didn't happen, but this one is happening, while you've got talking to somebody who's still drawing parallels between the two. And you're going, right, okay, you're so far behind in this conversation that it's going to take you a while to catch up with that. And meanwhile, by the way, since we're in Ireland, it's none of our business anyway. It really is none of our business anyway. What we need to be concerned about is not what the Jews are doing in Israel to the Palestinians in Gaza. We need to be starting to figure out what the Jews are doing in Europe to Ireland through the European Union's political institutions, and what they are doing to Ireland through globalist financial institutions. And that question is being deflected. But on the other hand, I will say this, is that the idea for the first time that Jews could be bad people, again, going back to the other Holocaust, another Shoah, the idea that the Jewish people is not made up entirely of people whose names were on Schindler's List is in and of itself a bit of a jarring moment for the average Irish person. And in that, there's an opening there to segue in and go, you do realize, don't you, that they are, this is what we're dealing with here is a fundamentally evil people. And they go, yeah, Israel. And you go, okay, we'll talk about that for a while. We'll talk about that. You see how they did Israel? You see how they did it from the beginning, through the Balfour Declaration, through the Rothschilds, through the money power, through the their manipulation of finances in the second or in the First World War, to get the agreement from Britain that there would be a Jewish nation state. Yeah. Okay. You see what happens from 1948 and the various wars that they provoked against themselves so that they could bring in European power and then United States power to win those wars for them. So that, yeah. And you see how bad those people are? Yeah. Well, guess what? The reason they can call upon all of this power outside of the state of Israel, If Irish people tried to do that with our immigration population in Ireland, what the Israelis are doing to Gazans, the whole world would fall in on us. So why isn't the whole world falling in on Israel? Why isn't everybody going, if it's only an Israeli problem, if it's only the fact that Israelis are bad or the Israeli state is founded in some kind of noxious way that is unique and that has never been seen before, if that's the only problem, then how come they're able to rely on such an enormous amount of international support? And why, in particular, is the Jewish state of Israel able to rely 100% on the Nazi dictator in the White House? And people go, whoa. And then you go, could it be because it's the Jews? And then, of course, you have the JFK files coming out. And that's been a big thing because, for Irish people, that was in the Kennedy administration was the, let's just put it this way, is Kennedy battled his Irishness to become president. It was a net negative. And every president since has tried to find some degree of Irish ancestry in order to parade that with the view to getting more votes. So for Irish people, viewing the world and viewing Irish people's performance within the world, John F. Kennedy's presidency was our arrival. That was when we had finally made it in the United States. We were finally 100% accepted. We were proper Americans in America. And to a certain extent, that gave a great pride to Irish people in Ireland that the President of the United States was an Irishman. Now, that was absolutely enormous at the time. And since it is carried down in the most absurd form, we have a place called in Ireland called the Obama Plaza, where Obama claims to have had Irish ancestry, and there's a statue of himself, Michelle, outside this. Anyway, it's gone crazy here. But the affection in which John F. Kennedy is held in Ireland was at that time extraordinary. And is to this day a fundamentally Irish phenomenon. We do not see the assassination of John F. Kennedy as a foreign event. Irish people, and certainly of a certain age, Irish people see that as something that happened to us. It happened to our people. It wasn't even like the Twin Towers falling. It had that was a terrible event that happened in America. It's not even like the Titanic sinking in terms of its epoch-making. It was very much a sense when the news came through from Dallas, Texas, that John F. Fitzgerald Kennedy was dead. That was for Irish people, one of our own has been killed. And to find out in the year 2025 that it was the Jews who killed him. You got to go through the Israeli state and Mossad and CIA and mafia connections and all the rest of it. But wherever you go, it's Jew, 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 Jew. It's not that Mossad's not the constant present, the constant presence. CIA is not the constant presence. The FBI's inaction is not the constant presence. The constant presence is the Jewishness of all of the forces which came together on that day and fired that bullet that went through his head. And that is a conversation opener in Ireland, like you would not believe, on the Jewish question in general. And for Irish people who have this notion, oh, it's just the Israelis, they can't understand why the United States has not actually declared war on Israel, having realized that Israel was responsible for the death of John F. Kennedy. Never mind have they got to the point that they the answer to that question. The answer to that question is deeply embedded Jewish power in the United States of America. But having said that, all these things that have happened have opened up an avenue of conversation. And so these things are not common knowledge and they're not common understanding. But having said that, no other narrative explains these things anymore, which people actually know. No other narrative other than the anti-Semitic narrative. No other narrative can explain the behavior of the entire global system in the way that anti-Semitism can. There's a hole somewhere in any other explanation. Oh, it's the communists did that. Oh, yeah, but who are the communists? Oh, well, it's cultural Marxists are doing that. Yeah, but who are the cultural Marxists? Oh, well, transgenderism, that's just sexual perverts. Well, that's all. Yeah, but who are these sexual perverts? And who is the money for these sexual perverts coming from? Oh, it's the Israelis. Yeah, but how can the Israelis do this? How can they afford to do this? Why is Israel a rich country? It's a desert land. Why was it not a rich country when it was Palestine? But it's now, where's the money coming from? Well, where's the international military support coming from? And they're asking these questions, and the only answer that answers all of them together in a coherent and logical manner is the anti-Semitic narrative. And people are kind of choking on that now. But on the other hand, when you're actually in conversation with people, it's very difficult for them now, as of 2025, to explain all these phenomena happening all at the same time without factoring in a fundamental Jewish influence behind every single part of that agenda.
And that's a crucial point, by the way, well stated. We are, I would say, hitting that cusp where obviously you operate on Twitter. You certainly see how much the message is changing. People are inherently forced to talk about this issue on all parts of society, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's, again, whether it's the transgender agenda, or whether it's what Israel is doing across the seas, or, you know, the financial situation that we find ourselves in, or pornography running rampant in society, mass immigration. Every door that you look behind, you can find this same culprit. And once, you know, we continue to link that for everybody in their minds and make it very simple, because people are simple-minded, right? They don't want to, you know, I don't expect mm-hmm. the average citizen to be watching Europa and reading Mein Kampf and, you know, giving themselves mm-hmm. the whole educational process on these things, because that's just simply not how things work. But for them to at least be questioning things and come to that general understanding of what the circumstance is, that sets us in a very different circumstance, you know, just that general understanding. And this comes through inherently social pressures, right? The problem is the whole reason that people are so afraid to touch on this one subject, and especially in the United States, is there has been this massive campaign to teach everybody that anti-Semitism is the worst thing in the world. There's nothing worse than that. Even racism doesn't touch on that. You can't go anywhere near anti-Semitism. Don't speak about Jews, and especially not in a negative light. And now that that's starting to shift and change, you know, again, think about the anti-Semitism laws that they're trying to introduce into the United States. Yet again, I find this to be actually a positive thing. You know, people go, oh, well, we're going to get arrested for talking about these issues. Well, this is good, because now this shows the public who's in control. If that's the only group of people that laws are being enacted in defense of, clearly there's got to be some kind of a reason behind that. You don't see Trump making a law to stop anti-white hatred, even though it runs rampant everywhere you look. There's literal organizations in the United States that have debated the morality of killing white babies upon birth. Mm. Where is the anti-white legislation? And it doesn't exist. And as people start to see these things, that narrative starts to change, and that's when things you know, get better. So I'm curious, looking forward in the future for yourself, how do you see this moving? Do you see you know, a do you see Ireland ever becoming a national socialist state? Do you see that as a possible outlet? Do you think that Ireland is going to be taken over from, you know, playing the political system and gaining power inside of that political system? How do you see Ireland fixing the circumstance that it's in today?
Ireland becomes a national socialist state, or Ireland ceases to exist. Those are the two options. And as soon as people realize that, then one of the obstacles to Ireland becoming a national socialist state will disappear. Because as soon as it's a life and death choice, and people understand that it's not a choice between higher taxes and lower taxes, and it's not a choice between a nice area and a more run-down area, and it's not a choice between a good school and a medium good school, that it's a choice between perversion, it's a choice between being like outnumbered, and it's a choice of being slaughtered in your own homes. That it is literally a life and death question, and that it is very, very soon. Then that removes the obstacle to the idea that there should be a radical solution, because we're not there yet. And once people realize there needs to be a radical solution, that's actually where national socialism comes into its own. Because a lot of people who have diagnosed the problem, even a huge element of it is the Jewish problem, have attempted to explain how it might be solved by removing Jewish influence in a different way than removing it through National Socialism. That it can be done in a way other than the only time that it has ever been effectively done in a modern nation state. Because The examples of Jewish expulsions, first of all, the examples from Jewish expulsions in the Middle Ages and forward from there are not particularly useful in a number of ways. One, they're too far back for them to be politically equated. And second of all, they ultimately didn't work. They were expelled from here and they went there. They stayed for a while, then they came back and so on and so forth. And it was just a nomadic circle of gullibles, right, around Europe, which they just moved from. And then, and of course, in the immediate pre-World War II era and post-World War II era in the United States, you got introduced to Judaism en masse and Jewish power en masse, because, of course, the center of international finance capital and World War II was, I don't know if it was so much the catalyst or the consequence of it, but the center headquarters of Jewish international finance capital was moving from the city of London to Wall Street, New York. That was a process that was going on probably a little before the first World War, but was really taking place between the two wars. And then you have the large influx of the numbers to man the positions in the post-World War II era. And Europeans is one of the things that convinces them, of course, it was a Holocaust, because where did all the Jews go? Well, I tell you where they went. They live in New York. They live in Manhattan Island. They live in the United States in general. That's where you if you want to go looking for the 6 million, don't look for ash pits in Poland. You're not going to find them. You're not going to find the mass graves in the Ukraine that you're looking for, because they are in the synagogues. Their children and grandchildren are in the synagogues of New York and Washington and Chicago and Boston, the center of Irish America. In Boston, there's where the Jews are in control as well. And if you want to know where the 6 million went, that's where they went. Physically, they went to the United States. And the center of headquarters of international finance capital moved from the British Empire to the United States. The United States became, as a consequence, the dominant world power. Britain collapsed under the weight of trying to support international finance capital and its agenda through its expanding its empire. And since then, the United States has carried on the role of being the Jewish big brother, minding the state of Israel and minding Jewish interests worldwide and intervening everywhere and anywhere and to whatever extent was necessary in order for that to survive and for that to continue and for that to grow. So when we say, is there a possibility of Ireland becoming a national socialist state? There's either a possibility of Ireland becoming a national socialist state, or there is no possibility of Ireland surviving at all. The same is for the United States eventually to realize, is that the constitutional norms which the founding fathers put in place in 1789, and then with the Bill of Rights afterwards, the Ten Amendments. That framework is only viable in a constitutional republic which is homogeneous, which is all white, which is predominantly Christian, and above all else, where there isn't a huge racial minority bordering on a majority, and where there isn't this subversive element in control. Because, of course, obviously, July the 4th, 1776, were the Jews there? Were they involved? Of course they were. They were involved in both sides. So it didn't really matter to them whether the British Army triumphed at Concord or the American independence cause triumphed. Really, we win either way. Same Battle of Waterloo. The Rothschilds in London won because the British won. The Rothschilds in France would have won if Napoleon had won. This is the way it has always worked. But the United States either grasps this issue in a modern form, or, and that's National Socialism. Ultimately, that is not National Socialism. Call it Nazism if you want. I don't engage in an argument about the origin of the word Nazi as opposed to National Socialism, because that's an awkward one in America, because it's already associated with Marxism in Ireland, for example. And you already have this hill to climb with people. But the other thing is that when you're telling people that the whole fabric of their national political structure needs to be altered, or the nation is on a suicidal course, whether that's in Ireland, France, United States, Britain, anywhere, you must present a positive alternative. You must have something that you say, now, when that's gone, this is what we will bring in instead. And this is what it will look like. And this is how it will affect your daily life. And if you don't have a philosophy of government, if you don't have an ideology of government, then you have no way of telling people anything other than what they already know, which is how bad it is where they are right now. And people in pain simply freeze up if they do not have a means of escape, and a clear means of escape, and they simply despair. And that's why I think that Americans have latched on to Donald Trump in the way that they have. Last gasp of constitutional republicanism in the form that the George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, etc., laid it out, that he was going to be the last chance for this to work. And he simply is not. He simply is not. In Ireland, the problem we have with the political establishment is it universally unpopular? Yes. But when it comes to an election, do people vote for them again? Yes. Because the alternatives on the ballot paper do not have a coherent philosophy of government, an ideology of administration, which says, if these people were gone, if they were removed from office, and if they were replaced with us, whoever us might be in the given question, this nationalist group, that nationalist group, is this is what we would do, and this is how we would do it, and we would do it fundamentally different. And within the modern context, to deal with Jewish subversion, to deal with racial identity, to deal with a European consciousness, to deal with the question, the existential question of survival or death as a people. The only philosophical foundation which has ever been implemented in practice is National Socialism, 1933 to 45, or really, in a certain sense, 1933 to 39, because the war is an aberration of National Socialism, because, of course, it was forced upon Germany in the circumstances they were in. Now, did the National Socialist government know when it came in 1933 that they were eventually going to be involved in a cataclysmic European struggle? Of course they did, because they understood the Jewish forces could not permit even an oasis of viable European culture and civilization. But still, the war is an aberration and ought to have, in the totality of the thing, there should have been 6 years at the beginning for the reforms in Germany that created the powerhouse that was able to engage in that war. Then there should have been 6 years of war. There should have been a German victory. And then we should have had the last 80 years of actually living with a National Socialist Europe, and actually a constitutional republic in the United States might even be considered. Transfer of the headquarters of international finance capital, only the headquarters, mind you, but in the headquarters from Britain to the United States, firmly established, the new American order, as it was called, but it was just a, you know, it was just moving house for the Jews, exactly as Hitler said, who are the cosmopolitan elite, who are at home, as he would have said at the time. So he said in Paris or Prague or Berlin or London, he didn't even say Washington. He didn't even say Washington at that time. It was not as apparent. But that's exactly where the cosmopolitan elite that he was talking about moved to headquarters, just the headquarters, the subsidiary associations. So we need a modern example. How do you do it within a modern industrialized society? How do you undo a fully framed Jewish dominated society and culture? And Middle Ages examples are not examples of that. They're examples of immediate reactions to local phenomena and abhorrence with behavioral patterns. They're not global on scale. They didn't have the organizational structure that needs to be taken apart, and they weren't so all domineering. Only in Weimar Germany do you have, let's just say Weimar Germany has gone global, right, along with globalism. Weimar Germany has gone global, and it's a cliche, but it's a cliche I'm going to use because it's useful, is Weimar problems require Weimar solutions. And that's absolutely definitely true of Ireland. Now, can I say to you that that's what's going to happen? That the Irish people are going to turn en masse at some point to a national socialist alternative? I can't. But what I can do, and what we can do as an organization, is we can at least present that as an alternative. And we can do what we can do within our own context and within our own lifetimes and within our own abilities and limits to our abilities, present an alternative, functioning alternative to the system that is there. And then it will ultimately be for the Irish people in one way or another, whether it's through the political system of the ballot box or whether it's ultimately in some kind of revolutionary scenario. But one way or the other, the Irish people are going to have to choose whether to live or die. And they're going to live under National Socialism or they're going to die under the Jews. And it's the same story for every European and European descendant country on this planet. Live under National Socialism or die under the Jews. That is the two options. And they're the only options that are left. There is no conservative option left. The era of the white citizens' councils is over. It needs to be the National Socialist white civilist citizens' councils, or it's nothing. Or it's nothing. And America will have to, you know, is Trump standing in the way of that? Yeah, I think he is. I think he's standing in the way of it in the United States and it developing as a phenomenon. And I think he's standing in the way of it happening in Ireland too. Because I think we're going to skip the Reagan era, but we're only skipping it to a Trump era. And a Trump figure will arise who will not solve the problem either. And we don't have time. And the United States really doesn't have the next 4 years. Although, you know, you've got to take it now because it's there. And these are the facts before you. But the next 4 years, if Donald Trump is being president of the United States, probably going to take you into another Middle Eastern war with Iran. The refugees from that war and the wars in the Middle East in general for the creation of Greater Israel, those refugees are going to be dumped into Europe. And that's going to be a problem that we're going to have to deal with here. And so you're going to have to deal with another Middle Eastern foreign war or wars. And on the other hand, we're going to have this massive influx in Europe of new immigrants, all hostile to Western culture and civilization, and all hostile to us personally, and all having a feeling that it was the whites who drove them out of their homelands, and not understanding the Arabs to a certain extent understand that it was the Jews, but they conflate And of course, American politics and American discourse is largely used to support the narrative. They conflate Jewish interests with white interests when they are quite clearly not the same thing at all. And so those Muslim immigrants are arriving in here into Europe with an ancient hostility towards Christianity, an ancient hostility towards Christian civilization, a grievance against the American power structure, which they conflate with white supremacy, which our own governments are funding the propaganda to back that narrative up. And then they're coming here as a hostile minority at the moment, becoming a hostile majority. And in that scenario where they become a majority and then an overwhelming majority, well, then your back is to the wall. And I don't know what happens then. And I don't even want to speculate, because it's probably illegal for me to even say out loud what the solution would have to be in that scenario. But we are in we're still in the majority stage in Ireland, and by a significant degree. And so other options are available to us in terms of methodology. And you're still, technically speaking, in a majority situation in the United States, white majority. So you're still, technically, the constitutional mechanisms are available to you. But Trump, Trumpism, MAGA, that kind of politics is only holding you back for the time being until the balance tips and the majority becomes a minority, becomes a smaller minority, becomes a smaller minority. And the empathy which white people have towards non-white minorities is not present among the non-white minorities. It is not present for us. And we are going to find out when we try and make the same anti-racist appeal back to these people who are now physically in control because they of the sheer numbers. You've got the Jewish money structure above that again, but they're physically in control because they're physically present as the majority. When we try and appeal to them on an anti-racist platform to be nice to white people, we're going to find out that the only uniform, as George Lincoln Rockwell said, at the end of the day, the only uniform anybody's wearing in this war is the color of their skin. And you can't take it off. And they don't care if you're a white liberal, and they don't care if you're a white conservative, and they don't care if you're in the Ku Klux Klan or the National Socialist Party. It's not going to make a damn bit of difference. We're going to be like I was in 1995, wandering around the store in the black area, totally naive of the hostility around us until it's too late. Until it's too late. Is there another alternative to national? No, there is not another alternative to national socialism. There is a national identification of that. No, what do I mean by that? I mean, it'll find its own unique expression within the context of Irish culture. It will not be Germanic. And as it found its voice in Belgium under de Grelle, or it found its voice in France under L'Action Française, or as it found its voice in Britain through Mosley, it will find its authentic Irish voice and its authentic Irish way of doing things. And it will find its authentic American way of doing things as well. But the fundamental philosophy of National Socialism, as we know, is the application of the laws of nature to politics and social and economic life. And that will be true everywhere. And what the structural form that takes will not fundamentally differ, because ideologically it must be the same.
Fantastic. Very good. A very good answer. Probably the best answer you could have given. I entirely agree on that same very polarized stance that I truly believe National Socialism is the only solution to the problems that we have in front of us. I have one more question, and then we'll kind of go to conclusions because we're getting close to closing time. So my final question for you is, what can the average American person do that is well, average white American, I'll specify that since, again, we are very conglomerated. But what can the average white American do to help stand or spread the message on behalf of what's happening to the Irish people, as well as their own, for what they care about that? Although they seem actually to care more about what happens in Europe than what happens in America, sadly.
Yeah, well, that's a problem everywhere. Is we're taught to care about problems that are a long ways away, which we can't really do anything about anyway. And so we can sit around and debate and pontificate about things we can't actually impact. So yeah, that's
Absolutely.
I think
So
everybody
what
can.
can those Americans that are trained in that fashion, white Americans, what can they do to help spread the message on behalf of the Irish people and continue to push that understanding of what's happening to you guys as well as everywhere else out there?
Well, Clonairn has a North American branch. Now, it's very small by its nature. We're still small in Ireland, never mind that our branch be small in North America. But you can check out their channel on Telegram, the North American division of Clonairn. Irish Americans in particular, I'm going to say this, right? They can send us some money, right? They can send us money because I don't want to come across as like shaking the box for the shekels. And I do realize that every time you mention money, people do go, oh, well, we were waiting for the sales pitch and for the money box to start rattling. Well, yeah, okay. I'm just going to say it once and then pass it by. Is the fact of the matter is that the right wing in Ireland, in any shape, fashion, or form, conservative or otherwise, is very badly and poorly funded and does not have the kind of money to run large scale campaigns like we would like to do. And so that would be very helpful. The Irish American community has always felt an attachment to the homeland, I think. American first, of course, not like this. We've never managed to extract $40 billion a year from the United States like Israel. But the Irish American community has always felt close to Ireland. And the Irish people have always felt an affinity for the Irish America. We've always felt that Irish Americans are the example of when people say to us, and we have this inferiority complex in Ireland, and well, you were ruled by Britain for so long, and you were under the heel of a foreign power, and you never got out from under it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you were this level poor, and this level backward, and this level this, and this level that. And there's always been a kind of a psychological tendency among Irish people in Ireland to go, yeah, but look, there's the Irish Americans, and that's why John F. Kennedy's so important to us. There's the Irish Americans. That's what Irish people can do when they're free. And Irish America's been the example for that. So we ha now it's not something that's portrayed in the mainstream media anymore, but it is something that the average person feels is a deeper affinity, probably with the Irish American community than the Irish community in other countries like white countries like Canada and Australia and New Zealand and so forth, where large sections of the population. But there's a special relationship between Irish America and the Irish people at home going in both directions, which, by the way, the Irish establishment is doing everything it can to undermine and everything it can to Europeanize us, but not Europeanize us by bringing us closer to cordiality with the French and the German people, but in connection with a fundamental anti-Americanism, which is not anti-Jewish imperialism, by the way, but it's anti-Americanism, and we blame white America, and we'll talk about the Nazi Trump in the White House, and that's how it's to express itself. And we're to cut our ties with Irish America and look to Europe, but we're to, not to look to the peoples of Europe in a coherent way of understanding we have a shared fate, whether we like it or not, but through the institutions of the European Union. That's how we are to express our pan-Europeanism. And so every effort is being made to cut that connection between Irish America and Ireland, going both directions. I think if The average Irish American had an idea of just how bad things were, and that they are not as they are portrayed. They're not as they are portrayed in the American media. They are not the way they were in Ireland, and they are not even actually the way they were a decade ago. A decade ago, would have made all the difference between Irish America's perception of where Ireland was and where it actually is. But even that was a far rosier picture than was actually true even 10 years ago. As I say, Clann Éireann is organized and will be organized on the North American continent. It's not exclusively to feed back into Irish political discourse, but to take the political discourse that we have and bring it, give it, when it has its Irish form, that it can have its unique Irish American form, shall we say, as well, and therefore be expressed that way in its Irish Canadian form. Not too many Mexicans, mind you, of Irish extraction, so we're okay there. We won't have it. Technically, it's North America, but I don't see us opening an Acapulco. It's not happening. But that connection is very important. It's very important on an emotional level, and we need to make that a physical level, because the contribution of Irish America to the Irish independence struggle against Britain, when of course Britain was the headquarters of international finance capital, that was hugely significant, and was always will always be a part of our heritage, and presumably will be part of our future too.
All right. Well, thank you very much both for that explanation, and additionally for coming on the show. This was a pleasure, very informative. I learned quite a bit.
I hope I didn't talk too much, because I have a habit of giving.
It's not a problem. It's an interview. I like to allow my guests, my show, my audience hears plenty of me every day. So I'm more than happy to allow somebody else to take over for a bit and give them some information that I don't have. So I'm very happy to hear about Ireland. I am I commend your struggle and your efforts. I've seen quite a bit of what you're doing, and I think it's extremely impressive. And where can my audience support you online? Where can they find you? Where can they support you in any way, shape, or form?
Well, quite literally, you can go to the website of Clann Éireann just by Google. A search on Telegram will bring you to our Telegram page. A search of my name on Telegram will bring you to my Telegram page, and so on and so forth. And you can interconnect, and to the extent to which you want to connect doesn't matter, because we do have, as I say, a foreign branch, and we do have a membership for people of Irish extraction, largely, to exercise abroad. So you can actually join Clann Éireann, so long as you're European descended, of course. So I would suggest to people just look us up. It's not we're not that hard to find, because it's a bit controversial. we've managed. So let us say, it's not been a pebble in the pond to have an openly national socialist organization operating in Ireland, which is distinctly Irish and is not LARPing as some kind of like historical reenactment movement,
yeah,
or something like that. It is very real. It's very now. It's very here. It's very up to date. And it is Irish in its own distinctive way, while being authentically National Socialist too, and tracking its history very much and very clearly back. It's created its own splash, and it's created its own notice. So we won't be that hard to find if your audience wants to find out about us. And so I was very happy to come on here tonight for me, this evening for you. Very happy for the invitation, and I really appreciate it, and really enjoyed being on and having the opportunity to talk to you and to your audience.
Of course, my pleasure. And again, it's been great to have you, and you're always welcome back. If there's a pressing issue that comes up and there's something you want to spread the message about, I'm more than happy to host you, have you on to discuss
it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Of course.
I just want to thank your audience as well for their attention. I hope they found something in what I said of use to them, or of interest to them at the very least.
Okay. Well, yeah, always, again, have an open invitation. And thank you to the audience for listening to the show. You know, I always appreciate you guys. Don't forget to make sure you do follow Justin and share some of his work around, help him out. Share my stuff around, as always. You know, sharing clips, sharing posts, things like that. Just getting the message out there is the best way that you can help us right now. And again, there always are those financial options to support down in the description below on the bio site. That's always greatly appreciated as well. With that said, we're going to close out. Thank you again, folks. Thank you, Justin. And we'll see you guys on Monday. We'll be picking up on Mein Kampf reading again. So picking up on Chapter 2. We'll see you guys then.
Okay. Good night and God bless.
All right. We are off.